Welcome to Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a program dedicated to biblical truth and prophecy featuring Pastor Dan of the Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Welcome to Mission Watch, another Messiah's Branch national satellite radio program. We're broadcasting from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. The broadcast date for this program is November 11, 2012. Saints, the world is in turmoil, and most just don't realize it, but we are in the time of the end, and that's the time before Messiah's glorious return. So it's time to get out of sin in the world and look to the holy city. Look to the one who suffered and died for you. Please make this choice tonight. If you need help after the program, call me. If you need a prayer, call me. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your prayer request, or message. I will pray for you or with you. The phone number, of course, is 620-878-4682. 620-878-4682. And in an emergency, I even give you my cell phone number, which is 316-619-4886. And in reference to that, if the fellow that called me wanting to know about the music that I played for commercials, please call me, and I will send you a CD free of Brother Ben music. So call me, I'll send you a CD, and I'll tell you all about it. Use my cell phone number when you call, 316-619-4886. Always glad to help a brother out, especially one that's into praise and worship. Anyway, you can always find updates with the breaking news, our ministry, radio program archives, our mailing address, and so much other if you go to our blog, which is prophecyhour.com, prophecyhour.com. Of course, you got to put the www thing in it, but if you just Google prophecyhour.com or Pastor Dan Catlin, you'd be amazed at what you might find, or Messiah's Branch. Also, don't forget, if you need something and you're listening to radio, and a lot of you folks out there that are listening to radio, listen on satellite, don't do internet, please call me at 620-878-4682, and you can also call me on that cell phone. Anyway, now a prayer, and I'll bring on tonight's guest. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name I pray, Father God, I just pray tonight that radio goes according to your will and not mine, nor really our guest's will, but yours, Father. And please, give everyone out there ears in which to hear the truth. Amen and amen. Well, election is over. Wow, what a failure, I might add. We're saddled with a man who is bent on destroying the United States as we know it. Did you catch, folks, what he said? He said, vote for revenge, really? Okay, I'll vent a little bit after I bring on tonight's guest. Our guest has been on with us before. In fact, I would say he's one of my favorite guests. I really enjoy talking with this man. He works with Wally Chubat. And Wally Chubat's an ex-terrorist, and so a lot of you folks that haven't ever heard me say this are probably wondering, well, ex-terrorist and all this, what are these guys working on? Well, I'll have him explain that. Anyway, he's also the author of a really good book. It's called Unsung David. If you haven't got your copy yet, I strongly suggest you get a copy. It makes great reading and tells you how to stand up to adversity. And I think we're all going to need to know how to stand up to adversity in these next 4 years. Unless, of course, you're one of those out there that voted for Barack Obama. And if you did, I don't know why you would be listening to our radio program. But anyway, let's welcome now Ben Barrack. Are you there with me, Ben?
How are you, Pastor Ben?
Well, that's really a loaded question.
like I've been saying all day, never been worse.
Never been worse. First off, was you shocked? Did you,
I was mildly surprised. I thought that, you know, going into Election Day, my sense was that Romney seemed more positive. He had a much more upbeat persona, and Obama seemed a little down. Romney had all of the turnout to his campaign stump speeches. Obama did not. It just had the feel, and I'll be the first to admit it, although I did not make any predictions. I did have a sense that it was going to be Romney,
right?
And I thought that as a result that the turnout would happen, and that the Senate races would fall in the Republican camp, and neither one of those happened. And as I was watching these returns coming in, it just started to dawn on me that something is wrong here, and then it just kept coming in, and it's like, bam.
Wow.
Well, who saw this coming, you know?
Really. Let's go with this. For the last year, you know, about or so, I've been interviewing guests and everything, and predominantly most of them thought we were going to be stuck with, you know, Obama again. And, you know, I thought so too. But then here at the last, when I saw Romney destroy Obama in the first debate, I did think, well, man, you know, we actually got a chance. And then I started seeing Romney get more and more upbeat. And so then I changed my story. I thought, well, maybe we're just going to win it. Maybe I better be positive about it. But, you know, all in all, I think what changed it, and I want to ask you about it, what do you think changed that? His momentum was going. Do you think it was a storm, as some are saying?
I think yes and no. I think it was the storm, but only because the media spun it the way it did.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that spun more than the storm was the media. I mean, you had Katrina, and the media took a natural disaster, an event, and blamed the president for it, and it worked. Then 7 years later, you have a storm, and the media uses the natural disaster to spin it positively for the president. That tells you the power of propaganda.
I think that
Chris Christie doing what he did, you know, and then crying because Springsteen talked to him on the phone. I think Chris Christie kind of helped the media do its dastardly work. Because you know, it was Obama needed a perception out there that he cared, that he was responsive to natural disaster, and that he was bipartisan.
Right.
He gave him the bipartisan image, and the media gave him the other image.
Right.
So I think the hurricane helped, but I think Romney did it to himself. I think I may have told you this. Before the first debate, after the primary, the time from the end of the primary until the first debate, I was not on board with Romney.
No, you weren't. Not at all.
No, not at all. I just couldn't get excited about it. I was getting frustrated with him not fighting. And then when I saw the first debate, I saw that this guy has fight in him. I had more respect for him after that first debate because I saw a guy in the primary that was willing to fight Republicans, but after he gets the nomination, I saw somebody that wasn't willing to fight the Democrat.
Right.
Until I saw that first debate, and I gained a newfound respect for him. I found myself being energized. I found myself being on Mitt Romney bandwagon. But that's where he surged. And this is the conventional wisdom that drives me nuts. Is what worked for him was being aggressive, was being assertive, was being on offense, was fighting, and he surged. He gained 5 percentage points after that first debate, and he decided not so much for the second debate, but the third debate, he was like a guy, to use a football analogy, he was like a guy that went into a prevent defense up by 6 points at the end of the game and gave up a touchdown on the last play.
Right.
I mean, that's what happened yesterday. And I think that had Mitt Romney decided, because, look, the other thing that the media did was they ignored the Benghazi thing Lock, Stock, and Barrel.
Sure
the
did.
The only person that could have made the media report on Benghazi was Mitt Romney.
Absolutely.
And he had his chance. He kind of blew it in the second debate. He blew his. He didn't really nail Obama on it.
Well, let me butt in for a second. On that second debate issue, you know what? There you had the media again. You know, the media blatantly lied about it. And so, you know, that put him against the media. I don't think that Romney, I don't think it's so much that he didn't want to or whatever. I don't think Romney knew what to do with it because he's not, I don't think he's that kind of type of a debater or whatever. But and not to give him any break or nothing, but I think I'm looking back and saying what we originally said. The media, you know, the propaganda, the media, I think that had a lot to do with it. And you're right. I think if he would have drilled him, especially with the real information that's out there about Benghazi, then, you know, I think it really would have mattered. So is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it would have forced the media to cover it. And as it is, they didn't cover it. There were basically three aspects to the Benghazi story, and Mitt Romney could have nailed Obama on all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the first is the...
Well, wait a minute. Before we get into... Because we're going to do... folks, most of this program, I think, is going to be about Libya. But so before you open that can of worms, I want to say one more thing about the election so I don't forget. And I'm not really addressing you, Ben, as much as I'm addressing the audience out there. Folks, and I know that most of you folks out there that listen to our radio program, you know I have some people out there that listen that don't believe in God, but most people out there that listen to this program believe in God the Father. They believe in Jesus Christ or Yeshua Messiah, you know, the same person. You believe, you consider yourself a Christian, a believer. Well, this whole election would have been different. In fact, we may not even have been had somebody running against Barack Obama had the Christian vote turned out in the first place. A shocking statistic that I found out, and I don't know why I didn't explore it before, but I found out, and it was just before the election, and really made me leery, was the fact that how many Christians, if you already know the answer to this, how many Christians out there do you think are registered to vote in this country? Don't know? Okay. Well, it's like this, folks. Out of all the Christians out there in the country that are registered to vote, out of the Christian community, all those that are believers out there in the United States, which there's more Christians than anything else in the United States, less than half are registered to vote. And out of that half that are registered to vote, 30% or less vote. And there's more of us folks than there are of them. And so while you might want to blame your neighbor or somebody else for voting this man in, I think you need to look at your own pastors and ask them, if they didn't speak out for the election, ask them why they didn't. And look at your brothers inside your fellowships and things and find out if they are voting. Because it is our duty as Christians to speak out against evil. Just like I told a fellow at the gym last night, he said, well, I didn't vote at all. And I said, well, have you ever heard the saying that evil prevails when good men do nothing? Of course, he had a comeback, and his comeback was, well, I never said I was a good man. Well, that goes beyond saying. The point is you need to stand up and vote. You need to be counted. You need to do it in your local elections. You need to do it all the way across the board. To claim yourself to be Christians and just believe that you don't vote or you don't get into politics allows abortion to happen, allows all these other things to happen. So you and are also the problem. If you didn't vote, anybody out there listening, whether you're a Christian or non-Christian, if you didn't vote, you are part of the problem and not the solution. Anyway, back to Ben. You still listening to me, or did you give up?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I have said everything I want to say right now. I've vented, and now let's continue on with Ben Barack.
Well, I don't know where we left off.
We left off. You started bringing in Libya.
Yeah. Well, you had mentioned evil is succeeding and good men do nothing. That is a quote attributed to Edmund Burke. And in my book, doing the research for my book, I found the actual quote that was attributed to him.
Really?
Because that what you just said is has been attributed to him, but it came from something that's maybe not. It came from the actual quote, which was, and I found this fascinating, which is, when bad men combine, the good must associate, else they will fall one by one, an unpitied sacrifice in a contemptible struggle.
Wow.
And I think they took that quote and they kind of did, watered it down a little bit and made it simpler. And that's the one that you referred to. And I just found it. I just found the original one
really
more powerful in regards to what he was trying to say.
I wish
both apply.
Right, right. I wish you'd email that phrase to me. I want to, you know, keep that up. Please email that to me sometime when you're not doing anything like the dishes.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, but as far as Romney and the whole Libya thing, I found myself, and maybe I'm the exception, but when I was watching that third debate, after his initial response to Benghazi and then move on, I was angry. I mean, I was looking at Mitt Romney and going, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? And then the next day, I get up and everybody's saying how brilliant the strategy was. And I never bought into that. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
He made a calculated blunder, is what he did. Because, you go with what works. And what worked for him in the first debate was to be aggressive.
Right.
Like.
Right.
And instead of doing that, he decided that it was more expedient, beneficial, or whatever, to play it safe and come across as looking presidential. But one of the things that we're learning, and one of the reasons that Obama has been so successful, is because of emotion. He is able to inspire people. He is able to, you know, he's got charm, and he appeals to the heartstrings, you know, not to mine. Let me make that clear. But he's got this ability to inspire people to do certain things and to act, vote, to support, all that stuff. And that's so much more powerful than getting up there and you know, stating matters of fact. And I think that when Mitt Romney decided that he was going to move to the center, he lost the enthusiasm. He lost the degree of enthusiasm that was on the right in the base.
Right.
So, you know, we also learned that Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan, garnered less votes than John McCain and Sarah Palin in 2008. And I found that mind-boggling because in 2008, they had almost 60 million votes. It was 59 million and 800 and something. Change between McCain and Taylor. And here we have Romney and Ryan getting 57 million and some change. Now, in 2008, Sarah Palin inspired people.
Right.
She got people to support McCain. And it was very similar this go around. You had Romney was kind of like the McCain figure, the establishment guy, kind of wooden, not all that inspiring. And they had a he made a what I would consider a Palin-like pick in Paul Ryan,
right.
Somebody that the Tea Party folks and the conservatives could get behind. But what he did that was unfortunate was I think they kind of shackled Paul Ryan on the campaign trail and they didn't let him be who he was. But I also think Palin was probably a little bit more inspiring. She just has an energy about her,
She's amazing. I not to interrupt you, but Sarah Palin, I had hoped that actually she would run. I think she would, if she would have ran for president. I don't know if she would have beat him, but I think she'd have come a lot closer than this.
I think she would have, Pastor Dan, because I mean, look, we had a caller into the show today, that made a good point about why Barack Obama is so successful. Is he's hip and he appeals to the media culture that exists now, and he's got kind of a celebrity status kind
right.
of deal. But Romney doesn't have a celebrity deal, a celebrity status. But the one person he does in the Republican Party is Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin is a rock star.
Yeah.
And I think it was a mistake for her, and you know, she had her reasons obviously, but I think it was a mistake for her not to run.
Right.
I think if she would have run, I think the field would have thinned much more quickly than it did. I think I think you would have seen, because you saw the vote split for so many months, you saw it split between
right.
Gingrich, Kane and Perry and Santorum and Bachman and you know, all that. I think had Palin gone in there, the herd would have thinned much more quickly.
Right,
and
I agree.
We would have seen Palin versus Romney, and I think Palin would have won that one.
Well, I do too. I absolutely.
Right on the bridge, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. We need to be looking towards the future, but and what's going to be in store for these next few years. But on my last thoughts about Palin is, yeah, I don't know why she didn't do it, and she is a rock star. And on that, let me tell you this. You know, I watched some very intelligent, you know, pastors or speakers talking over the years, and the ones that give a lot of facts, you know, or sit there and read the Bible or, you know, just give a lot of facts, well, you know what, even though they have all the facts and they really know their Bible down, when you get somebody up there that comes and just starts speaking, you know, and is charismatic and really doesn't give a lot of facts and just a lot of talk, you know what, they're usually the ones that get listened to. And that's what Obama is. He's just a charismatic teleprompter speaker.
Well, it's passion. It's passion.
Right.
Passion is what gets people. But when you have passion in and of itself is not good or evil. But passion in and of itself excite either
right.
good or evil. If passion is something that can be used for good or evil.
Right.
And I think when you don't have passion, you become irrelevant.
Right.
You know, people maybe become more indifferent to you. When you have passion, you inspire. And that in and of itself is not good or bad. But when you have passion and it's for the good, that's very, very powerful stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, and speaking of passion, I hope our Congress, I mean, now, you know, we came to the today and it looked like, it said, the headline on drugs says the GOP offers, you know, Obama something. But what I'm wondering about the GOP is not so much in negotiations over anything. Isn't it those guys, the ones that do impeachments and things, the House of Representatives?
Yes, the House impeached and the Senate convict.
Okay.
Or acquit.
Okay.
And so that falls on John Boehner's shoulders. Unfortunately, what I see, and we saw the opposite from Bush. George, and I don't want to be a downer here, but I'm giving you my perspective. I think that in George W. Bush's case, we saw in 2004, in his second term, and I remember this day like it was yesterday. I remember election night. I remember the victories. I remember him beating John Kerry in Ohio, and I remember getting 55 seats in the Senate. We had a mandate. We were gonna have conservative on display in his second term. And it went the other way completely. George Bush's second term ended up being abysmal because
right.
he got away from conservatism. When his mandate in 2004, he had more more capital at his disposal, political capital at his disposal than he did the first 4 years, but he went the other direction. I think what we're seeing here, what we're going to see, and this is just my thoughts based on what I'm seeing so far, is that we're going to see opposite with Obama. I think what we're going to see with Obama is him use his second term. He's not worried about getting reelected again. He's an ideologue, and now we have less power in the Senate than we did. We have some radicals that were elected. Scott Brown lost Elizabeth Warren. She is a radical. Tommy Thompson in Wisconsin lost to a left-wing radical. We have gotten radicals elected into the Senate. And say what you will, I don't care what they say, that's what they are.
Absolutely. I'm going to have to butt in. Hey, look, I'm sorry. Well, I'm going to have to butt in. We've been having a great conversation. That's how we've already realized that we have come to the middle of the program. And so we'll come back and we'll talk about these things with Ben. But, Ben, where can they find your book at and tell them, you know, also how they can listen to you on radio?
Yeah, benbarrack.com, BenBarrack.com. The link for the book, Unsung Beings, is in the top right-hand corner. You can't miss it. It's a copy of the photograph of the cover. And you just click that on, and it'll take you to where you need to go. And the shows are on the website as well.
And, folks, you can also check out some things he does at wallardshoebat.com. And we'll talk about that, and I'll get him maybe to, we'll try to put all these things in as much as we're talking when we come back, and we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Grab your coffee and tune in each night at 8 p.m. Eastern 5 p.m. Pacific, to the Omega Man Radio Network with your host, Shannon Ray Davis. Omega Man Radio is taking enemy territory for Jesus Christ, Yahshua preaching the gospel of the Messiah, and ministering in deliverance and miracle healing. Add some great guest interviews, and you have the recipe for fresh oil for the airwaves. Tune in at OmegaManRadio.com.
We're back. This is Pastor Dan Catlin, and you're listening to Mission Watch on the American Voice Radio Network. Please remember to pray tonight about a donation for our work with the homeless and poor from our mission church in Wichita, Kansas. Well, of course, folks, the homeless are poor, but we're talking about the poor people that have roofs over their head, that have been struggling through this economy to put a roof over their family's head, but they don't have enough money to buy new clothing or any clothing for that matter, or for maybe they need first aid things. They can't afford to go to the doctor. So many of them think that I'm their doctor. They come in, I give them over-the-counter medications. You know, I put stitches in, took stitches out, all these kind of things, and people come to us. There's countless people that rely on our little tiny mission church. You would be amazed. We've been doing this for 13 years. We're now in the holiday months. Thanksgiving is just a short time away, and that's one of our busiest day of the year. People come in looking for a nice atmosphere, Thanksgiving meal. Well, a lot of people give out meals. We give out love. And a family atmosphere, not just hurry up and finish your meal and leave, but a relaxing atmosphere and love, camaraderie. People think feel like family when they come to the place, whether you're poorest of the poor or somebody that works at the bank. They all feel welcome. And then in December, it's December 25th, everyone and everything is closed on December 25th, but we're not. We're open. And the other agencies, we're not an agency. The agencies count on us to be open, and so do the people, so they have a place to go to, which really amazes me because most of those are Christian agencies, but yet they lock the people out on, you know, December 25th. Go figure. Anyway, right now it's also cold and flu season. With the poor, so many times that just simple flu turns into something far worse, or even or lasts them. If it doesn't turn into pneumonia or something, it'll last them from now until through March if they don't get some kind of help. Where that help? Yes, now through January is a time of the greatest need for the people, and it's sadly also the time of our slowest donations. Because, folks, the holiday season with the economy the way it is, people are spending money on family, and I'm not blaming them for that. But our donations are this is the slowest time of year. Folks, I know most of you are hurting, and after this election, I know many of you were counting on the election to change things, and now it really only looks worse. Folks, the bottom line is this, though. Unless you open your hearts to this ministry, this mission church, we just cannot go on and continue. For 13 years now, we've helped thousands upon thousands of people with no help from government or any organized church or group. The Father has used those of you that listen to us on radio to achieve the things He wants us to do. So many of you that listen, you know, I know, don't keep the same holy days as we do or share many of our beliefs. But we should all agree that caring one for another, as Yeshua said, caring for the poor and those cannot help themselves is serving God, and that's serving God the Father. For we serve God by serving others. That's right. How do you serve God? By serving others. We are to become servants. Consider helping us when they come and see the mission church door open. So many of us, again, we count on us for food, clothing, Bibles, prayers, healings. That list goes on and on, just like the people come on and on. Help us care for the people that the Father sends us. We get no help again from any organized churches or government agencies. It's only folks like you that have supported us for 13 years that make this mission church work. If each one that listens to this broadcast donates something, we would be more than hit the mark. Any size donation would help. And unlike a lot of Christian ministries, I'm not going to sit here and tell you how well blessed you'll be for giving to the poor. Well, I believe that you will. I could give you countless scriptures. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to try to use witchcraft to bring you in to convince you that you're going to be damned if you don't give. You just need to pray about it. We all last hope for so many. We're all responsible to care one for another. We are brothers keepers. And the Father does notice all donations that come from the heart. Pray about it. You can donate online or by mailing a check or money order. You can find this information at prophecyhour.com. And now enough of me. Let's get back with Ben. But the phone number again is 620-878-4682. And are you still listening, Ben? Are you there? Okay, good.
I'm here.
You were starting to get fired up about us losing to the Senate and saying the wackos got in.
Yeah, radicals.
Oh, radicals, radicals. Okay.
Yeah, and wackos. And John Boehner, I think, is in a position where he's a little bit more alienated right now because we saw him in the first term of Barack Obama really get pressure from the Tea Party, and now that the Tea Party has essentially really taken a beating in this election, the Tea Party took a hit, in this election, there's mm-hmm. no doubt about it. And so John Boehner is now in a position where he's the Republican guy at the tip of the spear. He's the most powerful Republican, and he is not the strongest Republican. And I think what we're going to see, and you just referred to it on the Drudge Report, that what we're going to see is him probably cave more in this term, Barack Obama's term, than he did before, because the conservatives in the Tea Party movement doesn't have the power, I think, that it did before. And he will probably be more conciliatory to Obama than before. And that's troubling to me, because I think we need a strong leader. And he is not, I don't think in any way, is the best choice for Speaker. But
well,
be what we got.
I agree, unless Dallas ran to something that you said, too. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought something got disconnected. Anyway, he's being weaker, and I started this off by hoping that we had strong people in there that would maybe even try to impeach this man. I do believe that there's some impeachable offenses, and we'll get into that. And I think Libya's the number one. But what I see is, without somebody having a strong hand, you said it, that this guy was going to, his own agenda, isn't that kind of spooky? What is Barack's, or not, what is his agenda, do you think?
Well, his agenda is to weaken America. You know, we've seen that. America has been weakened under his first term. And I think that's going to continue. I mean, what did he say? Open mic gaffe with the president of Russia.
Right.
About more flexibility after the election. I saw in Investor's Business Daily today that there is a armed submarine, a Russian submarine, off our eastern seaboard.
Right, absolutely.
We've got to be concerned about this stuff, and we're just, as a nation, we're not. And you talk about impeachable offenses. Richard Nixon, the Watergate thing, began before he was reelected, and it blew up during his second term. Now, what's different here is that back then you had Republicans that were willing to do the right thing and vote against the president.
And the news media.
And today we have a morally bankrupt Democratic Party that isn't willing to do the right thing. It's only willing to protect its own. And you have a complicit media, but all that to say, Benghazi is Fast and Furious was Watergate on steroids, and Benghazi is Fast and Furious on steroids. And I think that between those two scandals, there's got to be some sort of a leadership movement in the House. I mean, Boehner avoided Fast and Furious. I think as Fast and Furious was breaking over the last year, I think Boehner was just hoping that Obama would get elected or get booted out of office, voted out of office. And now Boehner has got to deal with what the opposite of that was. And see, I believe that's an example of taking the path of least resistance. When you take the path of least resistance, it invariably leads to a much worse place.
Right.
And I think what we saw with Boehner in the first term and Fast and Furious, and this is just my opinion, but I think he was just hoping that Obama would be voted out of office and that he didn't have to deal with all this stuff. And now Obama didn't get voted out of office, and Boehner is in a very tough spot. He is the guy at the tip of the spear. He's the most powerful Republican, and Obama just got reelected, and he does not have, Boehner does not have a Republican-controlled Senate. In fact, I think the Democrats picked up a seat or two.
Yeah, they did. Let me address first the issue of, because I want to get out about the Benghazi documents that you found, but I want to address this first. Fast and Furious, that isn't really over. Aren't they going to be bringing up the subpoenas or something now? What happened with that?
Well, the Congress found Eric Holder in criminal and civil contempt of Congress. The criminal contempt of Congress went nowhere because Eric Holder's subordinate is the guy in charge of prosecuting him. Now, the civil contempt charge, Darrell Issa's office has filed a lawsuit, so that's going to be up in front of a judge. Now, what's probably going to happen, whether the judge rules in favor of Issa or not, whether if he rules in favor of ICE, he's going to say, Mr. Obama, Mr. President, you need to turn over those documents you asserted executive privilege over, and Obama's going to thumb his nose at him. And the other option is that the judge is going to say the president doesn't need to turn these over because of X, Y, or Z. So I don't anticipate much coming of that. The only way that I would see something like Fast and Furious or Benghazi coming to the surface is that things get real, real ugly here, and I'm talking from an economic standpoint. That we start going into a Great Depression, then at that point you are going to begin to see potentially, and I'm not saying this for sure, but potentially that's the kind of thing that might cause
the media
and some Democrats in the Senate to cow to some political pressure.
Right.
Unfortunately, it rains on the just and the unjust, as you well know.
Right.
And we might, in order for there to be justice in regards to Benghazi, Fast and Furious, or any of the other potential crimes of this administration, it might necessarily mean that something bad might have to happen in the country first,
right,
in order to get people to act.
Well, let's go with this. Something did bad happen in the country. He got reelected. But I agree with you also. But anyway, I do want to talk about Benghazi. You working with Walid Shubat, and tell us about this Al-Qaeda document or whatever it was that you guys discovered. That's pretty amazing.
There's a lot of names in the Middle East, and oftentimes it's difficult for people to make sense of it, and they just move on. You know, a lot of Abdullahs and Muhammad and Samirs and Shakirs. It's hard to track them all.
Right.
There's one name that I would suggest that everybody get familiar with, and that name is Abdel Hakim Belhaj. This man is the founder of the Libyan fighting, I forget, the LIFG, whatever that the acronym is, but it's an Al-Qaeda-like group. It's very much so. In fact, in 2007, Ayman al-Zawahiri, the number two at Al-Qaeda at the time, who is now the number one because bin Laden is gone, referred to Belhaj as his brother. Belhaj has is really a leader in the Libyan rebel movement, so much so that in August of 2011, there is a document that Waleed came into the possession, Waleed got had obtained, one-page document, and it's on the Transitional National Council letterhead. Now, the TNC, Transitional National Council, was the political apparatus of the rebels. It was basically the interim government of Libya after Gaddafi was overthrown. Well, on August 30th of 2011, a letter from the head of the TNC was sent to Abdel-Hakim Belhaj, telling him, informing him, that he would be the man in charge of security of Tripoli, of the entire city of Tripoli, to include the security of all embassies in that city. Well, that's where our embassy is in Tripoli.
Mm-hmm.
The Benghazi consulate, which is several hundred miles to the east, and there's even speculation now that it wasn't really a consulate, but we're not willing to go there just yet until we learn more information.
Right.
But all that to say, from at least August of 2011 until May of 2012, Abdel-Hakim Belhaj was in charge of all of that stuff.
Really?
And now he's still in Libya, and from what we can tell, he's still a very powerful force there. And there are other Al-Qaeda friendlies. For example, the brother of a guy named Al-Libi, who was the number two Al-Qaeda, who was killed by a drone. And his brother is now in charge of, and he was also essentially Al-Qaeda, is also in charge of border security of Libya, and they're basically allowing Al-Qaeda from all over the world to enter into Libya using false passports or expired passports, and it's just mind-blowing to consider that John McCain, when he appeared on the Sean Hannity television program a few days after the 9/11 attacks in 2012,
right,
basically stuck his tongue out at Hannity, saying, you were wrong, we elected, or the Libyan people elected a secular government in Libya. Well, no, they really didn't. What they did was they dressed it up for Western consumption.
Right.
That really, the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, those entities and those individuals are really the ones who are running Libya. And they may have elected some secularists in name only, but Al-Qaeda is increasingly becoming more and more powerful in that country. In fact, September 13th, 2 days after the 9/11 attack, get this, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was in the Ben Franklin Room in Washington, D.C., celebrating Eid Mubarak, Muslim holiday. And she was celebrating that. Christopher Stevens had died 48 hours earlier, along with three other Americans.
Mm-hmm.
She's in this meeting celebrating the Islamic holiday, and she's also introducing the ambassador, the Libyan ambassador to the United States, a guy named Omar Suleiman Al-Julai. Now, Al-Julai is an interesting figure, too, because he has referred to Belhaj as a moderate and that people need to support him. Well, Belhaj is basically Al-Qaeda. And you have Hillary 2 days after 9/11 with this Al-Julai character who, a year earlier, was at the Islamic Society of North America convention, and he was an ambassador in under the Gaddafi regime, and basically dropped off the radar shortly after the Arab Spring started. There, it would seem that he basically saw the writing on the wall, and I'm just speculating on why, but he dropped off of that position in February of 2011, when the Arab Spring started, and he then assumed that position in August of 2011, the same time that Abdel Hakim Belhaj was named by the TNC as the guy in charge of security in Tripoli. And we haven't been able to necessarily put Al-Jalai and Belhaj together other than to say that Al-Jalai has vouched for Belhaj as saying, you know, he needs to be a moderate, and he's not at all, obviously.
Obviously.
He's friends with Al-Qaeda. And that Al-Jalai assumed that position at the same time, around the same time, that Belhaj became in charge of that security. There's just a lot of very, very fishy things going on over there.
I got a couple of thoughts to throw in here that we need to bring out. And first off, I'm going to use this headline in order to bring this out of you, some of this stuff out of you. This headline, folks, and I haven't had a chance, it'll be up on my blog well before you've heard this program, but this headline today, again, it says, Muslim Brotherhood, Obama needs to accept the will of the Arab people. And so you have the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt now, Ben, and they're telling Obama what to do, that they're happy that he got reelected, but they're, you know, telling him that they need to bow to their will. Has not the Muslim Brotherhood, for the people, I know you brought it up before, but explain to them how the Muslim Brotherhood actually is in this administration?
Well, there are many examples, but, you know, the first one that comes to mind is the one that Michelle Bachmann brought up when she wrote five letters to five different inspectors general, Huma Abedin, Hillary Clinton's deputy chief of staff, who has irrefutable familial connections to the Muslim Brotherhood. She's just one of several examples, but probably the most well-known and easily documented as far as those connections. But the thing here is with Morsi, and that's Egypt's president, he, after the 9/11 attacks, was at the Clinton Global Initiative, CGI, that was here in the United States a week or two later. Incidentally, Mitt Romney also attended that. But Mohamed Morsi at that time basically said, and I don't have the exact quote, but what he said was that we need to be, the United States needs to be careful about its free speech laws because of, you know, the video. Obviously,
right.
Referring to the video that Innocence of Muslims that was attributed for causing the riots in Egypt, and that the Obama administration had to backtrack. And something very interesting happened today.
Yeah, he got a year in jail.
Yeah, exactly. That article, the Associated Press today, now get this, the Associated Press today reported that Nakula Baseli Nakula has been sentenced to a year in jail for charges related to his probation violations. Okay, that's all well and good. I understand that that's a political prop, that the administration is using him for political purposes. That's pretty obvious. But he also committed these crimes, so he's in jail. That's, you know, it is what it is. The issue, and it happened the day after the election, you'll figure. But what the AP said today, it said that the video is what caused the attack in Libya.
It did.
The Associated Press today, after the Obama administration, has gone through all of, twisted itself in all these knots about blaming the video and then having to backtrack on that and now saying it's a terrorist attack and is now, you know, twisted itself into knots. Now has the Associated Press blaming the video while it's reporting on Nakula going to jail, blaming the video for the attack in Libya.
I'll have to
twice in the same article if you can.
I have to reread the article, and I hope you guys at Wallach Place put something out. You know what? We talked our way clear to the end of this program again. Unsung Davids, it's a great book. Where can they get it at, Ben?
They can go to benbarrack.com, BenBarrack.com. You can click on the copy of the cover. If you have any difficulty getting to benbarrack.com, you can just get it at Amazon, Unsung Davids.
Okay, well, another thing. Now, these kind of things that we're talking about with Livia, and, you know, you do a lot of the writing while Wallet does research or whatever, you do a lot of the writing. That's at where at? Tell them about Wallet's place.
It's hubot.com, hubat.com. And you'll find a lot of Wally's work on there, and that's updated every day. He manages to come across some extremely explosive stuff that nobody else can.
Extraordinary, really. For the record, any advice for the American people now that we've lost the election?
Well, typically, when you have these kinds of situations where you have a real emotional election and there's a losing side, you know, spend the day after the election, you know, just licking your wounds and not thinking about anything other than, you know, letting it sink in. It's just like football players, you know, they have a tough loss, they spend the next day and they just, you know, they maybe sulk a little bit and they reflect on the loss and what it did. But the day after that and the days after that, you get back in the fight. You get back in the saddle. You do not sit back and give up. You get back in.
There you go.
The day after the election, you know, you're stunned, you're shell-shocked, and you don't feel like doing anything or talking to anybody. But that's got to wear off. You've got to get that to wear off and get back in the battle.
All right. Amen. Great words. Get back up and get back on the horse. You fall off the bike and get back on. All right. Thanks for being on with me, Ben. I got to say goodbye to people. Been great for being on with me. Thanks. We'll have you on again. Bye-bye.
Yes.
Folks, we must remember there is only one God. That is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His son is Yeshua HaMashiach, who gave his life for repented sins. After 3 days and 3 nights, he rose from the heart of the earth, and through only him is the way to the Father. Remember to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your mind, and then love your neighbor as yourself. Always, always, always be a blessing to others. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Lord our God, Father, King, Universe, ask in Yeshua HaMashiach's name that the Father blesses you and keeps you, and his face shines upon you and gives you peace like no one or nothing else can. Until next time, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the Internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Lawrence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time to Messiah's Branch.